that's nice. Well, as you know, Glenn Campbell passed away on Tuesday, and I was made aware of that recording. That is Wichita Lineman from a Glenn Campbell Jimmy Webb tribute produced by Bobby Parrs, featuring the amazing Chuck DeLoya on guitar.
Wow.
He's from around here. I think he's up in Vermont these days.
I did tell you that yesterday that Jimmy Webb stayed at our house.
Yeah. Oh, we'll turn your mic on.
Yes, we are.
Turn on Teresa's mic. It's the roundtable panel, and Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, and you heard Alan Shartok chime in. Nice to have you here, sir.
Well, it's awfully nice of you to say that, my good friend.
Yeah, that's very good. And also today, and this is nice, College of St. Rose Department of Communications Chair Kaylin Brown is here. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Ray.
And I mean that.
It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
How was the media project?
The media project was fun and contentious.
Did Shartok give you a hard time?
He gave Rex more of a hard time than me, so I would listen if I were folks.
That's par for the course. And Teresa Bourgeois, I know that you you caught some heat yesterday for a comment you made toward the end, and it was taken out of context.
I remember. I asked her if she was on a date at the and she didn't tell me.
No, there was a lightning round at the end about the situation at Google, and we were talking about whether or not the guy should have been fired, and also talked about the fact that he didn't think women had the ability to do science. And I said yes, I agree. I said yes, I was agreeing with Chris Churchill that maybe he should have not have been fired. But some people interpreted that to saying, yes, I thought that women didn't have the ability to do science.
And you didn't mean that at all.
Oh, my goodness, no. I'm horrified if people thought that. I think what he wrote about women's ability to do science was just ridiculous, as I thought what Larry Summers said, that women didn't have the innate ability to do science.
Hey, come on.
Ridiculous. So I agree that it's worth discussing whether or not he should have been fired, but
one of the great phenomena, and I hope somebody will study this, some sociologist or somebody else, is that people hear what they want to hear. I had no doubt what you meant when you said that. Yeah. You said freedom of speech, basically. We have to encourage freedom of speech, even if it's reprehensible.
And it could
That's
used,
what you were saying.
Yes, that it could be used as a teachable moment. But it was a really quick interchange, and I did go back and listen, and I said, I agree, after the discussion was about whether or not women didn't have the... Anyway.
Oh, come on.
But this this is really interesting, the question Alan raises about people hear what they want to hear.
Sure they do.
Because we do those exercises in the classroom, yes. We'll hold a press conference, and then students write a story built on that press conference, just as happens in the real world, a press conference is held. And when you look, every story that's produced from that single press conference is different. Only one set of words was said at that press conference, but 16 different people heard it 16 different ways and organized it in different ways, and that's how it makes us all unique, Alan.
Depending on who they are.
Right.
And, I mean, if you happen to be somebody who is very concerned about, you know, women's oppression in the United States, and you think somebody said it, it may be because, you know, you're looking for something to comment on when, in fact, it's one of your champions, one of your very champions, Teresa Bourgeois, who won't take any malarkey from anybody when it comes to sexual condensation.
Condensation? Ouch. Somebody got a wet wipe. All right. If you want to complain, the email address is... panel@wamc.org. The email address is panel@wamc.org.
Word.
Keep your complaints and letters. Keep your letters short and to the point. Please try not to write in more than once per day.
Or about that.
Or even once a week. I mean,
don't write in about that.
Don't include any links. We cannot click them, and we will not click them on the air. Don't use abbreviations if possible, and please proofread your emails before you send them. It's panel@wamc.org. And once again, our panel today is communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois and College of St. Rose Department of Communications Chair Kaylin Brown and our own Alan Shartok. North Korea has announced a detailed plan to launch a salvo of ballistic missiles toward the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam, a major military hub home to U.S. bombers. The announcement today over there warned that the North is preparing a plan to fire 4 missiles over Japan and into the waters around the small island, which hosted about 7,000 U.S. military personnel. and has a population of about 160,000. Japan and South Korea vowed a strong reaction, Japan saying they could shoot down those missiles if they so desire. The State Department says President Trump is on the same page with the rest of the U.S. government with his fiery threat to North Korea. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert says the White House, State Department, and Pentagon are still all in agreement. She says the world, too, is speaking with one voice. Nauert says the pressure by the U.S. and others on Pyongyang is working. Who wants firsties?
Me.
All right, go.
One of the reasons I think that it's so good to have Professor Brown here with us is because she's a journalist. And she teaches journalism herself. She's done it, and she's taught it, which is more than a lot of college professors can say that they did it. Well, but I digress. I do think that the Trump administration is very worried, Kaylin, about the idea that we're not speaking with one voice, because the news media has gone out of its way, and I think appropriately so, to ask his generals who are in his cabinet and his defense people and his secretary of state whether they agree with him. And then you hear a lot of hum, 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 hum. In other words, it's not exactly yes, we are. So they've rounded up all the cats, the stray cats, and now everybody has got to say, yes, we all speak with one voice. But it was clear in the beginning that they didn't speak with one voice and that most of the people didn't even know that he was going to say lip off this way.
Correct. And the New York Times reported about that indeed his support staff were all surprised, had no expectations about that. I agree with you that they have come into alignment about how the administration should present itself. We have Mattis saying that the Democratic People's Republic of Korea must choose to stop isolating itself and stand down its pursuit of nuclear weapons. I mean, clearly, that is trying to be on the same page. Trying to be on the same page with the president. So I think that they have come more into alignment. We also have the higher ups talking about the fact that people should still feel they can sleep at night. So at the same time that they are agreeing on the content of what the president said, they're trying to diffuse the aftermath, which was great. And I remember listening to Teresa just yesterday talking about her fears about this message about North Korea.
She ate all her Twizzlers last night.
Yeah. I know. I heard that. I felt I was simpatico with you. It is a moment of stress. You know, that's why the Tallahassee paper has the reference about how should people be prepared for a black sky moment.
That's very interesting. Let's pick up this whole topic of North Korea and this black sky a training event, which is coming up next week, I think, or the end of next week. We'll take a quick break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We have Teresa Bourgeois, Kaylin Brown, and Alan Shartok on the panel. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. Time is 9:23. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's our Roundtable panel, and on the panel today, Kaylin Brown of the College of St. Rose, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Shartok. And you, if you want to email us at panel@wamc.org. We were speaking at the beginning of the program here about North Korea and the latest with the fire and the fury, and several newspapers, or at least a couple that I saw, Washington Post, and I know CNN Online had it. They're worried about Trump and the possession of the nuclear codes.
Well, I think that's right. Look, I'm worried about that. We do know, and we have heard from experts, that he has unfettered and individual ability to set off a nuclear confrontation, and that nobody can stop him. Short of, you know, 7 days in May or something like that, some general standing there saying you're not going to get away with this, you can't do this. So several people have been putting in amendments or congressional bills, which basically say, okay, you got to ask first, you got to get a principal number of your cabinet members signing on to it in order to do it, but anything to sort of stop them from doing that. We know this is an impulsive guy, and impulsivity in the case of setting off the end of the world would not be a good thing.
This is why Hillary Clinton during the campaign talked about the fact that are people aware of what this means if this particular candidate, her opponent, were to have the football, quote unquote, and had the ability to exercise that sort of decision making. So the question was posed to the voters. We are left with the aftermath, and now we have what some people would probably characterize as a hothead holding the football.
Well, that's true. And as I have said on virtually every program in which somebody says it was up to the electors, you're right. The electors in the Electoral College did this, but it certainly didn't mean he got more votes than she did.
Correct.
But he got enough. And people were warned. I think the Clinton campaign was very firm on this. They ran ads. She spoke about it over and over again. And people made a decision on this. And the Did Not Vote party prevailed. I think that, you know, as I keep saying, that enough people didn't vote. But I think it is interesting that there's a constitutional question. If there are generals who think if Trump makes the decision to use nuclear weapons, then that sets off a whole series of actions over a half hour or an hour or so of steps that different people take to implement that decision. And all along the way, there are people who are supposed to just do what they are told. And the question is, will they, if they think it's an irrational decision?
Indication he will, though,
right.
Correct?
Well, there's no indication he won't.
But his words generally don't equate with the reality, so perhaps what he said about fire and fury will amount to nothing, because generally that's the way he is.
I think, you know, stepping back away from, you know, would anyone stop him if he tried to use nuclear weapons, the bigger issue you see today with China and their response, and it occurred to me as I was reading through all of this again last evening that just like on climate change, by the way that our president's behaving, he's shifting power to China. There's really a global realignment of power in this country, world.
As I said, I think yesterday, China is now the adult in the room.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Right.
Because China has said, you know, everybody step back, everybody quiet down.
I mean, except about that whole business with the South China Sea.
What about it?
With building artificial islands and trying to control the waterway.
Well, it's true, but it is not in the in the realm of a nuclear holocaust. In other words, you're right. Look, the Chinese are not great citizens. They're not. We know that. But in this case, you have the United States headed by a guy who looks like he's leading us into something terrible. You have the crazies in North Korea doing their thing. And here's China comes and says, okay, everybody, quiet down. Right. You got to give them some credit.
And we've always known that, you know, one of the roles of the United States leadership has been to help China understand the importance of using the leverage that we all know that they have to quell this situation. But in this case, that diplomacy is not coming from the United States. It's coming as a result of the United States' actions, and as opposed to their leadership.
I don't know China has the ability, you may think, to tell the North Koreans what to do. I mean, when you say we all know, I don't know about that. I mean, I think
they have the economic leverage that no one else has.
Well, the Washington Post just recently, in the last 24 hours, I think, talked about China is disappointed with the stance the United States is taking. This was from an international relations professor in Beijing, because we've just had the sanctions implemented and barely a breath has been had. And now we're moving on to we're going to go after North Korea. And rather than stepping back and letting those sanctions do their work, where China can have some restraining power over North Korea.
Okay. But Caitlin, let me ask you this. Suppose Kim does fire off four of his rockets, as he says. And let's just suppose they all go over the Sea of Japan, over Japan, and into the sea near Guam.
Which is what they said they were planning to do even before this.
Yeah.
Yes.
What would you expect the right answer would be in a case like that?
30 seconds.
What would you expect to do in a case like that? We'll probably have to pick this up afterwards.
I think that's a great idea, but we do have 30 seconds to fill, so somebody's
okay. I'm going to read a letter real quickly.
Please.
Okay. Trump seems to be deliberately attacking McConnell to distance himself from the failure of the Obamacare repeal. He typically does not take responsibility or ownership unless he appears to have been successful. Here's the way I see it. Very quickly, he is a guy who is used to staying within his private organization and walking down a hallway and saying, you're fired. He doesn't realize that McConnell is absolutely important to him.
All right, we'll take a quick break here. It's the Roundtable on WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC 934. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel. Kaylin Brown is here from the College of St. Rose, communications consultant Teresa Bourgeois, and WAMC's own bon vivant Alan Chartok is here. And the
and how about those Red Sox? How many in a row,
Go
Ray?
Sox. Go Sox.
How many in a row?
I care not.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in a row?
Good for them. Good for them. And the email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we have letters.
Yes, we do, Ray. Thank you for, thank you. Richard says, Kim Jong-un has unfettered access to nuclear codes. Panel, give us your solution and not just criticism. Well, Richard, who wrote this nice note, Richard, if we had a solution, we would really offer it to you. I think the one thing that we have been talking about here has been let these guys rave on until somebody does something that is really threatening, and then what you do is you fight your fight. But what I think we have to do here, personally think we have to do is here, is give the ability, just stay with it for a while, and if something terrible happens, then deal with it.
The rhetoric needs to change. I think Tillerson needs to become more proactive and get involved more boldly and make overtures of some sort of peaceful resolution here.
Yeah, I think, Richard,
how do you peacefully resolve it? They've been trying, the presidents have been trying this for a long time.
They have, but we haven't reached this level of stress and tension and...
Right, I think it's just such a precarious problem, and I think because the military options are so catastrophic, that's the real challenge here. And there's no doubt that this is, it's been a hard problem for Republican and Democratic administrations for a long time. And so because the military options are so catastrophic, one has to focus intently on the diplomatic options and deftly. And that's the concern about the president's statement, that people don't think it was careful or deft.
Okay, yes. Well, I agree with that. I think the president was outrageous. But let me suggest to you what happens, because I have to say this, what happens if he does, if Kim does send one over Japan and into right next to Guam, do you just sit there and take it?
Well, the question is, who's the they in that question? Is it who is at greater risk? Is it the U.S. or is it China? Do the Chinese then respond?
I don't think so.
They have weapons, right? So what do they do?
I don't think so. But, you know, everybody's leaving it to China to do. They're not going to do it. The real question
do
is,
the
what
Russians
do you want
respond?
The
they have nuclear weapons. Do they respond?
Teresa, let's try it this way. Trump is not the president. The president is still Barack Obama. What would he do if that happened?
I think he'd find another way. It's not Teresa here, but I think he'd find another way than escalating the way it's escalated. He managed not to escalate it, and I think people around Trump are trying to de-escalate. However, I don't think it's working. And if we are positioned where there is no choice, and what you described, Alan, which has been talked about by the Koreans, that they deliver these missiles near Guam, the U.S. may be forced into...
And over Japan.
Exactly.
Right. Well, the
Japanese... Then we may be forced into a position where we have to take military action, which I actually do not want to see happen. I hope it does not happen.
I don't think anybody in this room does.
No.
So again, I'll repeat that I've said it like a broken record. My hope is that we have, and I don't know this, but that we have sufficient cybersecurity capacity that we could weaken their capacity through a cybersecurity attack rather than a military attack.
Could be.
I don't know, but I think that's our hope.
Anne writes, read the Google memo. Teresa clearly was not, in capital, is not saying that women lacked the ability to be engineers. Alan is right that she was clearly talking about discussing the freedom of speech issue involved in the male engineer's moronic memo. Well, thank you for that, Anne. Appreciate
thank you,
that.
Anne.
Neil says, good morning, panel. Since the United States has always rallied to support its president during times of crisis, could Trump's rhetoric be calculated to solidify his base and poll ratings? Do you think, Neil? I mean, there's no question that you know, this guy thinks politically and strategically politically, and he thinks if he does this that the American people will rally to him. And we get lots of letters here saying you guys are unpatriotic.
But are we
not rallying to
are
him.
We feeding right into what the president wants to happen, with a lot of attention being paid now to North Korea and less attention being paid to Russia? Is this part of it? And is he manipulative?
And the choices are
at such great expense.
And the choices are?
Presumably it really doesn't matter whether the public is focused on what Mueller's looking at, because Mueller's still looking at it.
Yes.
Right. And but you know, you listen to Sebastian Gorka yesterday, who is has become one of Donald Trump's key spokespeople on this, and he says this is where appeasement ends. And so, I mean, that's the issue. And for those who have a different view, that's what I was trying to read this and think about, the people who have a completely different view and think we're a bunch of lefties who don't understand. They would say that we've got to this point because Obama wasn't tough enough, and that you need to take a very hard line. But then if you take a hard line rhetorically, then what's the hard line you take militarily? Is there a hard line you can take militarily that does not involve the use of nuclear weapons? Mm. That's the question. Mm. Is there any option? Because once you start with the nuclear weapons, then that's devastation and perhaps annihilation. I mean, we have over a million Americans in Seoul, South Korea, I learned last night. Over a million non-Koreans and 51 million South Koreans. What are we going to do about that? What about our military base on Guam? So that's the question. If you're going to take military action and it's not going to be nuclear weapons, what's it going to be and will that work?
And what about the whole, with the rhetoric, what about the whole theory of miscalculation? That's the next thing that we have to talk about, because I do think people will miscalculate. I refer to piece of evidence number one, World War One. That's how it happened.
And that's what Bill Richardson, who was a former U.S. ambassador to the U.N., he was a U.S. senator, he was head of the Department of Energy, which is, you know, nuclear power, nuclear focus there. And that's what he was saying, talking about last evening when being interviewed, that the real risk here is a miscalculation, a mistake.
Yeah, sure. James says, the pressure is not working on North Korea. We're sleepwalking into larger conflict. It won't start with nuclear weapons. It'll escalate from smaller conflicts with conventional weapons. North Korea wants guarantees that its regime won't be toppled. We desperately need a diplomat that someone in North Korea will listen to amid talks with them. The idiotic bluster needs to stop. The United States won't be likely to be very happy with a deal that we strike with North Korea if we have the brains and gall to make one. But it may be better than thousands of lives being lost, and that's from James in Ulster. And then Carl says, Google firing. Free speech is not a protected right inside a corporation. He used company resources for a non-business purpose and created a work disruption that interfered with normal business. Employees get fired for that all the time. Many companies are okay with limited personal use of systems, but sending mass emails usually gets an employee in trouble.
Okay. And that's it for now on the letters, but we love them, really, honestly. The email address is panel@wamc.org. Yes, Teresa.
But on the Google thing, could they have turned it into a teachable moment? Because we do need to have a discussion, because there are lots of people probably within Google who think women don't have the as Larry Summers, former president of Harvard, said, innate ability to do math and science. And which is not true, but it requires some discussion to get people to try to, you know, understand why they think that way and think differently. And maybe they could have used this unfortunate situation to create a teachable moment. That's my only wonder.
I completely agree that this is a moment for teaching. And even right now at the college, we're talking about ways that we're going to interact with different employees as a way to make sure that this is thought about, understood, and the ramifications of it. And how do we behave when we're talking to our students, right? Like, how do you make sure students are aware that we believe everybody in this room is capable, not just some of you? I mean, that trickles down, right? That has a trickle-down effect when that's said on a national platform. Right. And Google, which speaks most to our students, that's their native Googlers, they pay attention to Google, and that's a place some of them aspire to work. So they need to know that that's a safe space to become an engineer if they choose to become an engineer.
Right. And what kind of climate is there at Google? Is it a welcoming client for women engineers? Not reportedly. And how can you change that? I mean, they've just brought in a new diversity lead head. And
well, remember what this memo was all about.
All about their efforts to change.
They were taking Google to task for being too welcoming to this, to the theory that women and men are equal. So this is this, as somebody just said, moron, did exactly that and was fired for it. But of course, the legalities are very unclear. What the protections are? Was he a whistleblower under the whistleblower form of you know of corporate governance? Who knows?
Right, and I don't know anything else he's about his work capacity or anything else that he's done, but. But Ray wants to move on.
Well, no, absolutely not. I just need to take a break here for underwriting, and then we'll be back with more letters and more stuff here on the panel. Kaylin Brown, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Chartok are here. And you at panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Work on Sirius.
Okay, TV. We're on, people. I apologize for not warning you sooner, Adel.
Oh, are we been on?
Not noticing.
By the way, of course, Glenn Campbell died on Tuesday at the age of 81, and we've been listening to it. We started the show with Wichita Lineman, a cover by Chuck Deloy, a great local regional guitar player. And then we've been listening to, since, Glenn Campbell on the 12-string guitar of Glenn Campbell, an album I've never heard. Rob Jacone pulled that one out.
He's a fabulous, fabulous musician.
He was.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Well, he is
his
in that.
His music lives on.
In that his music lives on.
And good for Rob Chacon, the engineer.
Hey, that was an interesting find. I've never heard of the harpsichord and 12-string guitar.
Was Rob Chacon in College of St. Rose?
He was a graduate of our communications program. We're very proud of Rob.
I knew why you were doing
that. No wonder
that.
He's well-behaved today.
How about that? Well, look up the lyrics to Try a Little Kindness.
All right. Try a little tenderness.
No, kindness.
Oh,
that
kindness,
too.
Right. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We have more letters.
Peter says, I think that Trump and Kim Jong-un have a lot in common. They both want to be seen as the big man in charge, and they think that behaving in an irrational and erratic way serves their interest. This is just a hypothetical question. Communist China has gone to war with a neighbor to see it now, and no one seems to care. Just wondering, would anyone care if China invaded North Korea and unseated dictator Kim?
South Korea would be pretty interested about that. The U.S. would be pretty interested about that.
You think we would not like it?
No. Did the Chinese like it when we pushed the Korean army up to the Chinese border in 1954? They were not too pleased.
Times have changed.
Speaking of nukes almost flying, that was a time.
You're telling me that you would rather have this maniac in charge of North Korea than having the Chinese imposing a sort of Hong Kong.
That wasn't the question, sir.
Wait. A Hong Kong type of government, as unsatisfactory as that might be?
Of course, I didn't say that. That wasn't the question.
Why do you have that tone of voice?
You're like Hamilton Berger. You're just slightly inept prosecutor.
Why do you have that tone of voice?
No, not at all. Next letter.
To the panel. Would someone please address the issue of the relevance of sanctions in the case of Russia or North Korea when it appears as that through the use of bitcoins, it seems impossible to verify that the sanctions are being enforced? There was a brief report on this the other day, but I don't quite understand it. Well, yeah. I mean, one of the problems is that we think the Chinese may have voted for it, but the coal trade keeps going on between the two countries. Forget about Bitcoin. I mean, how do you enforce these sanctions that people voted for, but they're not adhering to? It's a rhetorical question.
So that means everybody shut up. Alan's going to go to the next letter.
All right. Ann. I think Ann, this is a second Ann. We discourage that.
We discourage two times a day.
Yeah. Hi, panel. I think the U.S. should stop requiring certain actions from North Korea before going to the negotiating table. Place no restrictions. Just go to the table.
Okay.
I think they're ready to do that. Kevin says, anyone who is helping them with their warheads, could it be Trump's buddies in Russia, perhaps? How about Pakistan? Regards, Kevin and LaGrange.
It's a good conspiracy theory.
There are a lot of those going around.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I don't think James says, just wondering.
It's not in their Russia's interest.
James says, just wondering, there has been tension with North Korea for a long time with them fight back. I swear that's what it says.
Okay, you should try to proofread the letters again.
With them fight back? But what do they really want that the rest of the world is arguing with? It is just that they want nukes. Is it just that they want nukes? It seems like them building nukes is a result of the world being against them, question mark. So, James. Thank you, James.
And again, you know, if you can just... I know that once you have an idea in your head, you want to shoot it off to the panel. It goes through a filtering. Sarah LaDuc prints them out and brings them in, and then we recycle them. But take an extra minute and just proofread it. It makes it easier.
Just as Donald Trump should have had his statement go through a filtering process the other day, that it didn't go through the typical filtering process.
Well, the statement in front of him was about opioids. It wasn't even about North Korea.
The printed statement
in front of him had nothing to do with what he spoke of.
Hi, panelists.
Hello.
The issue of one's observations being filtered through one's own background, experience, history is frequently demonstrated when listeners write in to complain about the panelists fighting amongst themselves. At times, it does make it difficult to hear each member's comments. However, in capital letters, however, this means business, however, coming from an ethnic background known for animated and at times contentious discussions, my reactions to those complaints is sometimes, what? As my tolerance for those energized discussions is higher than those who may have been raised in a quieter and more sedate family, as in, pass the peas, please.
I love this letter.
Throw them
please
in your head.
Pass the peas. Please comes first.
I love it.
Thank you.
Caleb Brown, you should be on every day.
Thank you all, panel. I, for one, love the lively, in capital letters, lively debating, and that's from Carol.
And we love hearing from you at times. Panel@WAMC.org is the email address, panel@WAMC.org. FBI agents looking for financial documents have searched one of the homes of President Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. According to the Associated Press, the warrant for the search on July 26th at Manafort's home in Alexandria, Virginia, sought information including tax documents and banking records. The Washington Post first reported the raid. Manafort has been a subject of longstanding FBI investigation into his dealings in Ukraine and worked for the country's former president. A research firm tied to a dossier of salacious allegations involving President Trump, meanwhile, is turning over thousands of pages of documents to a congressional committee. That's according to a person familiar with the situation. The firm, Fusion GPS, was turning over records yesterday in response to a request from the Senate Judiciary Committee. The panel is one of several investigating Russian meddling in the 2016 election. And Donald Trump has turned over, Junior, has turned over 250 pages of records to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and they received those records on Friday. They received 20,000 pages two days earlier from the Trump campaign. So things are perhaps moving along here with the investigation.
Don't you love this business about supplying investigators with 20,000 pieces of paper? You know, the whole idea that you give them 20,000 pieces of paper is not sufficient because you may have held back one piece of paper. You know what I'm saying here?
Are you suggesting obfuscation is at work here?
Oh, I certainly am.
That's the tone of voice I heard.
I guess
it is of interest, but documents will help in this investigation. So I think that the investigators will look at the 250 from Junior, the 20,000 that the Judiciary Committee just got from the oldest son, and they will have at those documents.
And the Manafort search warrant, which was now 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks ago?
Day after my birthday.
That's right. Yours was July 25th.
Yeah.
That's right. There was a big party.
One of my theories is that was what happened, is that everybody was so, you know, hung over from the party that they didn't pay any attention, because one of the big questions for Professor Brown has been, how come it took until yesterday for the Washington Post to get a hold of the idea that this raid had been conducted?
And I do not know who was sharing the information, or if the fact that the threat of leaks from Jeff Sessions' office may have silenced or gagged some people who usually would have leaked. I mean, we talk about this later on the Media Project next week, that the effort to gag people could have a chilling effect. And the question is, has it had a chilling effect?
Yeah, it could. Some institutions are obviously more confined when it comes to leaks. So, for example, the FBI, we think, has been famous for not leaking. And although, if you look at Robert Redford and whatever in All the President's Men, you know that the head leaker was the assistant director, turns out, of the FBI. But no, it really does mean some institutions leak more. So, for example, in the White House, we don't know whether it's Bannon, we don't know if it's the president himself, but a lot of people have been leaking and consistently throughout all of this thing. But in this investigation, I'm sure Mueller has told his people, we can't afford for anybody to be going away from the responsibility here and leaking information because it will discredit our investigation.
And was it the day after Manafort appeared in front of the Judiciary Committee
it was the day before.
Right. Yeah. He had appeared in front of the committee, and the next day, this FBI raid took place. So the journalists in D.C. are busy following an extraordinary number of stories at this moment, and perhaps there was no opportunity for them to go stand in front of the Alexandria home of Mr. Manafort to see if there had been an aftermath as a result of the committee inquiry.
What this tells me is that, you know, I have the 80-10-10 rule, 80% on policy, 10% on the Russian interference, and 10% on the investigation. And what this is a reminder is that the Mueller investigation is moving ahead apace, and that we don't have to be worried about the fact that it's not moving ahead apace, and that they're obviously taking it very, very seriously, despite the president's efforts, you know, otherwise, and that we can shift our attention to things like, you know, the proposed cuts in the Food and Drug Administration or NIH or CDC or education budget cuts and such. And that might seem a little Pollyannish, but it sends a signal that they are, it's a reminder that he's going about his business, investigations take a long time, and that we don't have to focus on that so much in terms of the day-to-day details, because clearly it's working itself through the process.
You had better believe that the White House and President Trump are keeping tabs on what is going on. Mm-hmm. I've always worried, really worried, that the two guys who are going to get it in the neck here are going to be Manafort and Flynn, and that everybody else is going to be let off the hook. We do know that the president let Mueller know that he was doing, quote, a good job. But, of course, that doesn't mean anything, because he also let Comey know that he was doing a good job before he – and he asked Preet Bharara to stay on. We know that. All of that happened. And so his word, whatever he says, doesn't mean anything. But you better believe that if he has to, he is going to fire. When I say has to, he's going to fire Mueller. He's going to get him out of there.
To Teresa's point that the investigation is continuing, at least we are getting reports, for instance, that Mueller has accrued dozens of lawyers to his legal team to work on this, which is notable. Right. So that's another instance and piece of evidence that he continues to move forward on this.
But, Caitlin, don't you think that there is a war room in the White House or somewhere near the White House that is keeping tabs on the questions that are being asked by the investigators so that they know how close they are to hitting gold?
Well, and
yes.
I'm sorry, you asked.
Short answer, yes. Go ahead.
And some correlate the we'll call them odd tweets. You know, when there's a Twitter storm from the president, some say that is a predictor that they've just learned something, and something over the next few days is about to come out, and that there has been a pattern to his particularly, you know, he has a particular flurry of odd tweets, and then a day or so later, you know, there's news that comes out. We'll see. But in any case, I think that obviously the investigation is going forward, and that's terrific. I would like to know, but I don't think it's happening, that more attention was being given to the other underlying issue, which is the Russian interference with our elections. Mm. And what systems are we putting in place
That's exactly right. But I do want to save a little time, if you would, Mr. Chairman, for...
You're talking to me?
Yeah.
Okay. I was dozing.
For the question of how Trump is getting along with his own Congress including the head man in the Senate.
Well, that's stunning. The attack that he had that he made yesterday.
Yeah, go ahead.
McConnell. Yeah,
McConnell.
Speaker. It was just absolutely stunning that he would go after him and try to shift the blame on the loss of health care to McConnell.
And that does go directly to your concept of what's going on with substantive legislation.
Right.
We need to take a quick break here. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We'd love to read more of your letters, and we have more topics to come. It's the Roundtable Panel. Kaylin Brown, Teresa Bourgeois, and Alan Chartok. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll be back. Like Bonanza meets the Addams Family. Well done with this music, Rob Jacone. It's 7 minutes after 10 o'clock on the round table. Ray in for Joe. Loving every minute of it. It's the panel.
Tell us how you really feel.
Alan Chartok is here, and Teresa Bourgeois and Kaylin Brown are on the panel, and you at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we have letters.
Maybe the best solution is to do nothing, and that's from Steve. A lot of people think that.
What's
the
subject heading?
It says Korea.
Ah, okay. Because that's generally my solution to most things.
That works for so many things. Yeah. Except for voting. That doesn't work for voting. That's how we ended up where we are.
Okay.
Dear panel, one possibility is the heading here. The question was asked, what do we do if missiles are launched from North Korea? The question should be, will the overwhelming influence on the military, in the Trumpian world, do what they are capable of doing, which is to blow any missile out of the sky, or will they let it fall where it's going so that they can have their war? 5 question marks.
Okay. Thank you for that one.
What if the sanctions hurt the people of North Korea more than the leadership of North Korea?
I wondered about that. Ray just did the most remarkable thing. I had it worked out with Joe. He moved the trash basket.
The recycling
basket over to my side so I didn't have to throw them over his microphone at his face.
Inside baseball, what happens is letters come in. Sarah LaDuc, our producer, takes a look.
Brings them in.
Sure that it's not one of those Ron Burgundy situations where Alan reads them and he's swearing.
That happened yesterday.
Almost.
Yeah.
And then Alan gets done and throws them across the desk with some level of success. And then the host, Joe, or me, or I would put them in the recycle bin. But I just gave you the recycle bin, so don't do it anymore.
You are one smart dude.
Okay. It's executive thinking.
All right. Hypothetical question. There's a hypothetical question. In previous years, People's Republic of China has attacked its neighbors. What if China were to invade North Korea and unseat dictator Kim? Would anyone really care? We actually talked about this earlier. Maybe this is an option for the world community to consider. So there was this question that was raised, I think, by Ray, but I'm not sure, which was, would we sit idly by and let the communists, the Chinese, come right up to the South Korean border? And I think in this case, they do it in a minute and a half, to be honest with you, because it's not the same Chinese that were fighting us on the Yalu during the Korean War. Because we know we've worked out a way of dealing with the Chinese. They own a lot of paper in this country. They own a lot of buildings in this country. We do a tremendous amount of trade with them. It's not the same commies, as we used to say.
Right. I'd love to hear. That's a fascinating question. I'd love to hear Chinese experts discuss that. And that's me sound like a silly answer, but I think it's a wonderful, fascinating question.
David writes, Dennis Rodman, where are you when we need you?
Well played. He'd get to the bottom of this.
He may have been called to the White House. That's always
point.
Possible.
Maybe he'll be Trump's Trump card.
Spignu writes, North Korea. Hi, panel. I am surprised how many people keep bringing up the argument that the peace approach didn't work. How does this argument compare our approach to China growing nuclear power after the Second War and Soviet Union during Cold War? Somehow we managed to avoid the war using other options, in quotes. North Korea doesn't want and need the war. They seem to be rather rational and want the recognition, preserve the regime, and grow the economy. Good discussion, says Zbigniew.
What was that name again?
Zbigniew.
I think
as in Zbigniew Brzezinski, but this is not. This is a different Zbigniew. Zbigniew.
Say it one more time.
Why are you laughing, Raymond? You like it when I embarrass myself, right?
You didn't embarrass yourself. It could be the real person's name. I don't know.
I want to know if we're pronouncing it correctly. Do we?
Yeah, you're certain? It's close. It's Zbigniew Brzezinski, right? And this guy is Zbigniew also.
Oh, look at the time.
Michael says,
TikTok.
It is now apparent that Trump put out the recent transgender's tweet to distract us from the feds executing a search warrant on Paul Manafort's house. How did Trump get away with this? Not now, Michael. You said it, and so he didn't get away with it.
Was that tweet on transgender put out the same day? That would be fascinating if that's true. And that would I would agree with our listener on that.
But I think there's faulty logic there. I mean, yes, is he that concerned with public perception, even though we know, everyone knows, and presumably he knows that the Mueller investigation goes on apace.
That we know.
It doesn't matter what he tweets.
His raison d'etre is public perception. That is this president's primary motivating force, I think. Not how we're going to improve what's happening in this country. It is narcissism. It is about me and how I'm presented to the public.
But
that's what he's about.
It would be, I'm not a lawyer, but I believe it would be highly irregular if the White House knew in advance that raid was going to happen. My guess is a secret raid by the FBI is a closely held information, so he would not know in advance. And by all reports, that transgender tweet was for a different reason. It's because his attacks, the president's attacks on Sessions, were beginning to erode his base. And so to try to provide fodder for his base, he did a number of things. Mm. He did that. He did his immigration proposal. And what was the third one? He did them all in a series over a week's time, and the speculation was that the legislative proposals like immigration wasn't going to pass, but it was all to try to settle down his base after he spent a week or more attacking Sessions, because the conservative right loves Sessions.
I'll buy
He's
it.
Their
yes.
guy.
Sounds
yes.
reasonable. Megan wants to know.
Hello, Megan.
Dear panel, love your intelligent discussion. I disagree about the teachable moment. If the email was race-based and made spurious offensive allegations about race, would we entertain the offensive argument and turn it into a teachable moment, or would we dismiss it? I think we should dismiss anything this offensive and not give this misogynist his 15 minutes of fame. And that's for Megan.
But it raises the question of misogyny again, which, as long as it continues, needs to be talked about. You can't pretend it's not happening, otherwise it doesn't get fixed.
I agree with you.
And I also think that I go back to 2005 when the president of Harvard, giving it a talk at MIT, and it came out a few days after, said that women did not have the innate ability to do science and math. Now, later on, there was a discussion of what he really meant. But that generated what turned out to be a difficult but very productive conversation. It got people really focused on this issue, and we can't pretend that some people don't think that, and we can't pretend that there are a number of things that occur in our culture, either directly or indirectly, intentionally, unintentionally, that reinforce those stereotypes. And if we're going to create change, we need to have a conversation about it.
And Bill wants to know, I wish you would read the memo before castigating it. It does not say women are not capable of doing STEM. Did you read the memo?
I did. I read it twice.
I knew that. I knew. I was so comfortable with knowing that I could say to you, in contradistinction to Bill's letter, did you read the memo? Because he was saying, did you read the memo? The answer is, I knew our Teresa would have read the memo.
Because I was so.
Some of us read about the memo, you actually read the memo.
I read the memo twice because I've spent a long time, years, working on this issue of women in math and science and its inequities and these assumptions. And so I wanted to understand what he was saying.
You were assistant to the president of RPI, weren't you?
Yes. And she, you know, called it the quiet crisis in our country. And I spent 10 years with her working on this issue. And before that, worked on it for years about trying to create more opportunities for women in the sciences, because we need more people in math and science. And you can't, as she said and others, you can't ignore half the population and fill the gap that we have in math and science in this country. You need to have it. Everybody has to be all in.
Clearly time for a beer summit, says Bob H. Nothing like a couple of chilled glasses to cool down a couple of hotheads.
You know, it's a great idea.
Well, I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, that's but neither of them drink
that?
Beer.
That was the Henry Louis Gates question when President Obama had Henry Louis Gates come to the White House for the beer summit.
Yes.
Because police in Massachusetts
Boston,
town
had
gone to
Cambridge.
Gates' house and harassed him. Right, when he was trying to get into his own home.
And they thought he was breaking in.
And Obama had the beer summit.
Yeah.
I forgot about
so that. Is it the Chinese who have the beer summit invited? But since they neither of them drink beer, maybe they'll have a tea summit.
No, there aren't any good Chinese beers. Don't you know a good Chinese beer? You know,
but Trump doesn't drink
the
beer.
The famous one is not very good.
The American craft beer is where it's at.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. And John says, I disagree that it doesn't matter that the public is distracted from the Russia matter. I think Trump is going to use the timing with North Korea to fire Mueller. Well, he'll think of something.
Well, that's interesting.
He could try to fire Mueller.
No matter what's going on in the world, except for nuclear annihilation.
Just except for that.
How come we were talking about this? It's amazing. I'm going to have to buy more Twizzlers.
Okay, absolutely. They have new flavor. They have chocolate now.
I'm allergic to chocolate.
My friend friend John A. writes.
Hi, John A.
NK, North Korea.
North Korea.
Stop doing that.
Oh, yeah, don't
North
ever
Korea, less here than meets the eye, ? Even if North Korea has a nuclear weapon, the minute it uses it, South Korea becomes an island because North Korea will cease to exist. Deterrence is the only rational reason to have such a weapons, and Kim has to know that, especially if self-preservation is his principal motivation. So what am I missing? Frankly, I fear Trump more than Kim.
And thank you for your letters. We probably are done with the letters for now. We need Malcolm Nance to answer this one.
Okay.
The 2-year-old diplomatic relationship between the U.S. and Cuba has been roiled by what U.S. officials are describing as a string of bizarre incidents that left a group of American diplomats in Havana with severe hearing loss attributed to a covert sonic device. You know Nance knows something about this. In the fall of 2016, a series of U.S. diplomats began suffering unexplained losses of hearing, according to officials with knowledge of the investigation. U.S. officials concluded the diplomats had been exposed to an advanced device that operated outside the range of audible sound and had been deployed either inside or outside their residences. Isn't that the weirdest thing?
What did you say? I didn't hear you.
That's hearing humor and acoustic weaponry humor.
Said from a man with two very expensive hearing aids, by the way.
$3,000 each.
Very nice. So what do you make of this?
What do you make of that?
Have you heard of such a device?
No. I have not heard of such a
device.
Well,
we tried to blow up Castro with a cigar. Remember that? We know that.
Perhaps there is a way to make our diplomats sick in Cuba and force them to come home. We don't know a lot about the symptoms. I haven't seen the medical community weigh in on this. Our president objects to the efforts by the past president to work with...
To do anything.
To do anything. To do anything, but
to
work with
a relationship
with Cuba.
This happened in fall of 2016.
Okay. Okay, I don't know.
All right, so we're going to move on.
Yeah, that's called Stump the Band.
Yeah, that one,
Malcolm Nance, please write us and let us know.
Stump the Band.
But it does remind us, though, as you're talking about, is this policy to reverse the progress that we've made in Cuba. Separate from this attack that I completely don't understand, generally on the issue of Cuba, it really is discouraging. This reverse of proposal. Go ahead. Sorry.
I thought that was one of the weirdest news stories I've
seen. Yeah, I didn't understand it.
But the timing now is
there's going to be a lot. I don't doubt that there's going to be a lot of new warfare of this kind.
In a single day, New York City courts have thrown out over 640,000 arrest warrants for people who didn't pay tickets for minor offenses years ago. District attorneys in 4 of the city's 5 boroughs joined in yesterday's effort. Applause rang out in a Brooklyn courtroom as 143,532 warrants were cleared.
That's a lot.
They date back a decade or more. They cite such offenses as riding a bicycle on the sidewalk or being in a park after hours. Participating prosecutors say some people who get into fender benders or even report a crime end up arrested over old summons warrants they didn't know about. But in their counterpart in Staten Island, they say the dismissals are unfair to people who do show up in court.
I thought that was brave of the fellow in Staten Island, but as the New York Times pointed out, that is his particular constituency. They have a very conservative constituency of firefighters and police officers in Staten Island.
Not all, who, but many.
No, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And thank you for helping clarify that.
You're welcome. Yeah.
But I think that there would be... it would be frustrating to be trying to adhere to the law and trying to prosecute these cases and then them being dismissed, right? So what happens to, I followed all the rules and I should get that, whatever the thing is. But if I don't follow the rules, I do not get rewarded. So with all the individuals in the four other boroughs, it makes sense. They had clear records for 10 years. For 10 years, they had not violated any laws. And so it makes sense that to move it along in the courts, I know they're trying to protect people who are afraid of immigration threats now. That makes perfect sense. But I wonder why in Staten Island, I understand his argument, he couldn't have gone with the other boroughs.
What I want to know is, and we need to dig further, it says the AP is very vague for minor offenses. Well, what does the AP consider to be a minor offense?
In other words, if somebody came to your house, Ray, your house, you've got five little kids, and peed against your house, would you consider that a minor offense?
So none of us at the table, I don't think, would like that to happen. But if I rode my bicycle on the sidewalk and then I received a citation, and then I did
not
address
it.
It
doesn't happen to be against the law to do that in Albany. I know when one guy almost ran me down one day.
So in New York, if that happens, and someone was cited, and then for 10 years they did nothing else wrong. They never adjudicated that case, but then they adhered to the law from then on. Do we need to continue to prosecute that case? Or are we now going to send all bicyclists loose on pedestrians across all of New York City's sidewalks?
There's one other thing. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. There's been a lot of argument about it. But it was only when Giuliani and according to the legend, only when Giuliani went after the squeegee guys and, you know, and all the turnstile jumpers that things began not only to occur on the local level, but also things got much higher.
Very
Why
nice.
Are you raising your finger around in the air?
So I'm
very
excited.
So the crime stopped.
We got to wrap it up.
Some would argue, though, that laid the groundwork for a lot of the tensions that followed after.
Yes.
Though.
Well, it has been so nice having you all here.
You lie.
It's nice to be had.
Teresa Bourgeois and Kalen Brown, both Red Sox fans, inexplicably. And Alan Shartok, a Mets
fan.
God bless you, sir. We'll be back on the roundtable.